Thank the light, everyone. I am...
What am I? Damn it, I had something and I just fucking lost it.
Jesus Christ. Your starship piloting frog.
Thank the light, everyone. I am your not even birthmarked wolf brother. And these... This is terrible. Thank the light, everyone. I am Desmond McNeese. And these are my wolf brothers.
I am your mentally degraded Asha man.
I am your non-marked blade master.
Ah, there we go.
I have no heron mark, though. There we go.
Nailed it.
You got marks. You got a scar on your ass from a dog bite.
I do. I'll tell you that story one of these days, too.
That's why Jeremy doesn't like dogs very much.
No, I love dogs. Just not that one dog that bit me.
Welcome to the Wheel of Time podcast. We are your true source, the purest light, your companion cast, a warder, if you will, for this journey through all things Wheel of Time. Holy shit, do we have a journey. We have two great episodes. I'm excited about what we're doing tonight.
I'm pretty bonered up about it, too.
And Justin's double bonered up because he didn't have to do anything. He just had to...
Yeah. That's the main reason why.
He had to drop by work real quick, get some weed, and he's ready to go.
I didn't even go to work. My assistant manager lives on the same property that I do. I'm like, yo, can you bring me a bag of edibles? I'll give you some cash. She's like, got you. Also, someone's calling in sick, and I have to report my podcast, so I'm going to need you to go back to work.
Hey, this is great. Appreciate this. Now get back to work.
Yeah, you're great. It's great. I'll do the other couple days before I go on vacation.
Justin gave me the best piece of advice on our first ever podcast. He said, the best ability is availability. So here we are, motherfuckers.
Here we are. In the fucking immortal words of Rex Ryan. Here we are. Here the fuck we are.
We are available to you.
You may not like it. You may not want to listen to it, but it's there.
We're here.
You guys don't want us, but you got us.
Jeremy.
Yes.
What are we talking about, man?
So we're going to talk about something that I always thought was very interesting and I thought would be a little more front and center in the TV show. One of the many things that was a disappointment to the TV show for me was lack of understanding of the Heron Mark blade. So in the beginning, in the very first or second episode, first episode with the Trolloc attacks Rand's house.
It's the first episode. They make a very big point of showing it too.
Yeah. So what happens in the books is Tam pulls out this sword and instead of fighting, I think in the TV show, they fight one Trolloc.
Yeah. Yeah. They're alone. Like
pretty sure. I mean, they allude to Tam, fighting more outside, but yeah, there's one Trolloc getting into their house.
There's one Trolloc. Yeah.
In the book, there's
dozens.
20?
What's a
fist? Fist is 100, right?
Probably.
I believe a fist is 100, but I believe there's like a little fucking, like probably like 20 Trollocs around their house. And then I'd say Tam kills 12, probably?
Yeah, probably pretty close to
well,
that.
Well, we don't get the sense in the show how far out of town Rand is.
True. That's another thing that you don't get.
I don't know. I think if you pay attention, you do. I mean, because they're on the road for a while. They're talking. I mean, I guess.
Well, Desmond didn't even know.
Compared to the book, no. Yeah. It's very long.
Yeah, Desmond didn't. You didn't even realize that they were outside of town in the first episode, right? You're just like, well, you're like, why didn't I don't understand. Like, why did he have to take him into town? Why did he show up when everything was over? You're like, well, he lives out like miles and miles outside of town.
Yeah, I figured when we saw them on the road, I just figured they were out doing road shit, making deliveries. I didn't realize they were traveling half the day to get in town.
No, like they live the equivalent of like where I live compared to, you know, like Sacramento. And then they only got a wagon to get there.
Yeah, exactly. It takes a while. So anyways, we find out that Tam has what's called a heron marked blade. And I have a quick clip. We'll play if you want. You guys want me to play that?
I do. I think real quick, I want to get to something you said. I think this is a big difference between television and books too. I think we see the heron mark a lot.
Right.
Like they're always kind of pausing on it and zooming in on it. And like, this is going to matter instead of having lengthy conversations about it. And I don't think that's a bad thing for the first season of a TV show to just kind of pique our interest and just be like, this means something. This is cool. We're going to keep our eye on it.
Yeah.
I feel like second season, it'll come on more because I feel like if you try, there's one of the things about Robert Jordan's writing is there's a lot of symbols. See that we were talking about with the Shan Chan, they have a lot of omens and all this bullshit. I think if you were trying to be like, Heron Mark, he's got dragons, you know, and I think if there's too many, you kind of lose what's important. I think that, I really think that if they don't, I mean, while I wish they would stay a little bit closer to the source material, I feel like if they try to stack too much up too fast, it's already confusing enough as a book reader to where you can go back and read it so many times. Trying to cram that much into a TV show, I think could turn people off as far as audience wise, or it could be too confusing to where it's too hard to follow.
Yeah.
Too many, like, you know, nicknames of like animals and dragons and stuff like that. It's like, you don't want to go too far. You can layer it, but it's like, they're going to have to be really careful because they need to give you enough to keep people happy, but then they gotta hold back enough to where they're not just dumping so much on you, where they're just like, who the fuck is this dungeon master and what is he talking about?
Robert Jordan comes from the, who's the guy who wrote Dune? Herbert?
The Dune guy.
Yeah, the Dune guy.
Herbert Walker Bush.
Herbert Walker, yeah. No, he's the second one. Yeah.
I think that was a president. I don't know.
He comes from that school of, you're just going to start reading in the middle. I'm not going to explain anything to you.
Yeah.
I'm going to use these words and you'll figure it out as I go along. Yes. There will be no explanation. There will be no exposition dump because you're going to figure it out as you go.
And we should write Billy Zane a little note to say that his acting did not explain enough things and that he needs to work a little bit harder when he gets to play Billy Zane as Asmodian.
# Billy Zane as Asmodian.
Smooth as butter every episode.
Well, and that kind of leads in a little bit to what I was going to say, and then I decided not to, but now you led me back to it, Jeremy. Like, one of the things that's hard for me and what causes me to ask you guys so many questions that, like, it's kind of like, you know, he just kind of jumps in the middle and just like, here we fucking go. Like, I'm still coming to grips with how spread out everybody has been for 1,000 years. Like, you know, in the clip I'm going to play for the next episode, like, they're so shocked that the sheep herder can be anything but a sheep herder. And like, even like the wise Aes Sedai are still just like, no, you make weapons. That's what you do. Like, you were born into it and that's your lot in life. And to me, it's just like, what are you talking about? These people are all over the place and they're seeing each other and they're communicating and there's Ogiers in the next town over, but that's because we started when the adventure began.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And for the last 1,000 years, everyone's just been like, nobody fucking move and we'll be cool. Like, everyone just stay in their place.
Nah, it's just rain. It's just rain. Well, and the irony of that is because the Aes Sedai have been dumbing themselves down for years in power. And while they have and hold a lot of knowledge, I feel like it's one of those things where they start to kind of empire and Jedi it. They start to archive it so they keep it, but then nobody actually learns it. And if they do learn it, they don't have a practical application for it. It's just like, well, the Forsaken were really bad.
Yeah. Well, why?
Dark One was a really bad dude, and some stuff that happened was bad.
And the Aes Sedai are bad too, but they're good bad. But so they're bad bad and they're bad. So who's really bad?
It was like even after the breaking, they preserved a lot of the knowledge, but it was kind of like, well, you know, we're going to fucking, you know, feed these people shit and keep them in the dark because they're, I don't even know. I really don't even get why. It was like more of a means of control, but it was like because the population was freaking out because they didn't have to deal. They didn't have they had never dealt with anything like famine or war or, you know, poverty. And like all of a sudden the world is ripped apart. And it's like there's starting from less than a beginning. You know, there isn't even, you know, because they don't even have the two halves of the Aes Sedai to work together to rebuild. It's like the females are going into hiding and trying to preserve everything they can while the men are just destroying everything. It's dirty men, tainted Sidene.
But and there was like, you know, there's also the Trolloc Wars and Archer Hawkwings Wars and the Aiel War and Ilion and Tyr fighting each other constantly in Kyrian and Camelin fighting each other and all the other countries and
all the plains, the Ara-Dhamman and stuff. The only people who really didn't fight through all those times were the Borderlanders because they were too busy keeping the fucking Trollocs off everybody's nuts so they could fucking fuck around.
Yeah. And even then they're having, you know, lands, Malkier gets swallowed up during that time too. So everyone's just kind of fighting to stay alive.
Do you feel like, it's getting off topic, but there are some more Harren marks in this. So we know how, you know, land basically, as Malkier is falling, Lan is spirited away by some loyal people. Do we think that Malkier being overtaken is something of long years of it? Finally, they just could no longer hold that area and finally fell to the Blight as well as the attacks? Or it was because of the sabotage and the betrayal by the people inside Malkier?
I'll take this one. I'll take this one, Jeremy.
Dez, if you got an opinion, man, hear me. I mean, like, because like you got Luke and then Isom, that whole thing, you know, which is still really confusing.
He's
to
like,
me too.
Yep. Luke, Isom. Yep. Really? Got him. Yeah, I think it's a combination of both, right? You're talking about.
It was like that was the tipping point where like they finally just, after the sabotage, they could no longer hold it.
Yeah, how can you? It's just, you know, a wave eventually breaking on the rocks is eventually going to break it down.
Hey, you know what I have been paying attention to? Speaking of getting off topic, have you guys watched Station 11?
Yes, I watched it all.
I'm only halfway through, so Kelly watched it 2 weeks ago and she's already watched it again.
Wait till you finish it and then I want to know your opinion.
Okay. Yeah. It's super well. I love how it's made.
I agree with you. That I agree. It's very well acted too.
Like if I can still like Lost, then this show may hold up after the final episode.
Dez, I'm telling you, well, if you can't be disappointed by the ending of Lost, then you're going to love everything. I wish I was you. You have the sunniest disposition of any person I've ever met.
I like the journey, baby.
You're like, this food is rotten. Oh, well, I'm happy.
But it's food. I mean, it's food. I'm fucking.
You know what? I'll throw up and I'll get to eat something else. I'm okay with it. Oh, my gosh.
Fantastic. So what?
I got another question before we keep going. Get going. Have you guys watched Obi-Wan yet?
I've only watched the first episode, and it's not because I don't like it. Like I actually, Kelly, this weekend it was, do you want to watch Obi-Wan or Station 11? And we got into Station 11 and have just been driving that bus.
If one of you fuckers will give me your login for Disney Plus, I'll watch it.
I'll give you my login for Disney Plus, but
good fucking luck with that. You guys are going to get, you're going to be on Mickey Mouse's shit list. Like,
Mouse shows up at your house. You owe me money.
You fuckers have been pirating my shit.
Hey, pretty soon we're going to be pirating Mickey if Elon Musk gets his way.
We don't have to pirate him. It'll be free.
Well, no, just Mickey Mouse is about ready to become free.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not yet, though, is it?
I don't know what we're talking about, so I'm just going to say yeah.
Mickey Mouse's copyright is about ready to be up after 92 years.
Yeah.
Something like a record amount of time.
It's not supposed to be.
First of all, we're probably already in trouble just talking about it.
Yeah.
Everybody shut the fuck up.
Naga.
Oh, wait, they own Zoom, too.
I get my Netflix logins from my cousin Dave. Thanks, Dave.
It's got to be an Eminem line.
No, it's... I can't think of it right now. I'll put it at the end of this at the end of this episode. That's what our outro is going to be.
Nice.
Thanks, Dave. I mean, and it's like, I guess Jeremy's right, though, about like, wish it would take it a little bit more front and center. But dude, really? Harren Mark is not that prevalent in the books. I mean, it's important, I think, as like, it's kind of like the gold standard is so you can kind of measure everyone's fighting ability.
Yeah, it becomes more important, right? It becomes more important after the second book because it's a way to identify the Dragon Reborn. And if you don't really know what to look for. And they may not even use that, right?
What do you mean?
The branding, the brands. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, right. I guess that's true. Yeah, because, well, no, you know what? It is important. That's okay. You're right. It's very important because, and I'm sure that we didn't get much of it in the first season. We did get a little bit, but the Carithian cycle, Prophecies of the Dragon, but that's one of the things that's directly, it's like once the Harren.
Yeah.
To mark him, you know, twice the Harren to mark him true. And then they say something about getting marked again, right? And that's the dragons.
Yeah, but the dragons, you could just use the dragons. You don't need the Harrens.
I mean, the dragons are a lot cooler looking than the Harrens because you don't see the Harrens, but you will literally see the dragons in every scene that he doesn't have long sleeves on. So,
right.
Would he be half the swordsman he is without that sword? Like, does it have any inherent powers?
Nothing to do with it.
Nothing to do with the sword. No, okay. It's not one of those like plus five things. It's just the only thing. Well, the only thing, the advantages that it would give him is like if he's matched against somebody who's as good as him and has a shitty sword, like he could literally possibly break their sword.
Yeah.
Because it's, you know, it is a power wrought blade. So all it does is get sharper. You don't have to sharpen it. It's, you're not going to break it. And so
it won't rust.
That would probably be the only, yeah, that'd be the only inherent, yeah, advantage that you would have from just the blade itself. I think a lot of his, you know, Luz Theron was a blades master, so.
Yeah, we're going to get into that here in a minute. What are we listening to, Jeremy?
So this is right after Rand takes his dad. After this is the very beginning of the first book. Rand's dad gets hurt. He takes him back to Emmons Field. And he's getting, Tam is being healed by Moraine. And as he's sitting there, Lan will look over and notice that he's wearing a sword. And from there, we're going to pick up right here.
So intent was he that he jumped when Lan spoke softly. "That is a fine weapon you wear. Is there by chance a heron on the blade as well?" For a moment, Rand stared at the warder, not grasping what it was he was talking about. He had completely forgotten Tam's sword in the lather of dealing with an Aes Sedai. It did not seem so heavy anymore. "Yes, there is. What is she doing? I'd not have thought to find a heron-marked sword in a place like this." "It belongs to my father." He glanced at Lan's sword, the hilt just visible at the edge of his cloak. The two swords did look a good deal alike, except that no herons showed on the warders. He swung his eyes back to the bed. Tam's breathing did sound easier. The rasp was gone. He was sure of it. He bought it a long time ago.
Strange thing for a sheepherder to buy.
Rand spared a sidelong look for Lan.
Probably one of the greatest swordsmen in the world.
For a stranger to wonder about the sword was prying. He never had any use for it, that I know of. He said it had no use. Until last night, anyway. I didn't even know he had it till then. He called it useless, did he? He must not always have thought so. Lan touched the scabbard at Rand's waist.
So, you get to find out that, you know, Lan is like surprised to find out that there's a heron-marked blade out in the middle of nowhere because, well, why would, like he said, why would a shepherd need a heron-marked blade? And you come to find in, as you read the books more, that they're very rare. Like, I don't even know. Do you ever run into another person with a heron-marked sword in the first? I don't think you find it running.
Well, Turok's got one.
That's the second book.
Oh, right. No, not in the first book that I know of. Wait, does Aglamar have one?
I don't think so.
No.
No, I don't think so.
No, yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, so when Rand is walking around, you know, he's got this heron-marked blade. And I kind of equate it to back in the old school days when you were a kid. And you're like, oh, you see that kid over there? Yeah, he's a black belt. And you're like, what? You don't have to say like black belt and whatever. It's just like someone knows that kid's a black belt. Except for in this, it would be like, if you had to, like, if you were a black belt, you'd have to wear your black belt every time you went outside. And everyone knew.
Yeah, you just wore your black belt everywhere all the time. Yeah. Everybody's like, ooh, everybody wanted to kick your ass.
Yeah, but everyone would know, like, oh, that guy's a black belt. And it didn't mean, it's not like a McDojo black belt where, you know, they'll see some of those guys who are breaking boards or trying to break boards. And their fists are bouncing off of the board and stuff. This is like, you were like.
Good technique, no practical applications.
Yes, these are like all Gracie black belts.
Not Shamrock black belt.
No, these, well, no, whoa, whoa, whoa. Don't you talk bad about California's own.
That's what I'm saying. Shamrock black belts were real.
Yeah, they were real.
They'll fight you. They will beat your ass. Those guys, they would just go and fight.
The Lion's Den, baby.
Bars for fun.
They didn't have black belts. They had cauliflower ear.
Cauliflower ears and black eyes. Bloody knuckles.
And I thought it was weird because I thought the Heron Mark was a special sect of blade masters.
No, nothing that organized.
Yeah, totally. Or like maybe an echelon above. Like, okay, cool, you're a blade master, whatever, but you don't have the heron mark, so you're pretty good right. at best.
Well, it's like Jeremy said, it's like, I think it's kind of self-policing because it's like, yeah, you know, if you got money, you can decide, yeah, I'm going to go make myself a blade master, but then the first blade master you come across is, and you like decide to talk shit, they're going to be like, can you kick my ass? And you're going to get your fucking head chopped off. So guess who isn't a blade master anymore? You.
This is exactly what I was talking about too. Like the fact that there's been several blade masters who have lived and fought and grown old and fucking retired, basically. Like, that can't be that fucking outlandish. And the fact that they can't believe that a Heronmark blade is outside of a major city.
Well, Jeremy, tell us, I think you were going to tell us how you actually achieved the rank of Blade Master, right? That was how, where this was going to start. I mean, this is your episode. Drive
it. Yeah. So there's two episodes. I will if you just stop talking.
I was quiet for like a record amount of time this episode, so I'm not trying to hear that shit.
I'm not being quiet. I'm fired up about this.
There's two ways you can become a Blade Master, and you can, and this is coming from the Wheel of Time fandom. And maybe it's in the books. I know the second way to get it is definitely in the books, but he says that you can become a Blade Master if you basically are recognized by, I think it's like five guys. They have to like watch you and know, like they have to say, like all five Blade Masters have to say you're a Blade Master.
Like unanimously, like, yeah, okay, he's good.
Exactly. Like, this guy's a Blade Master. But the other way that you can do it is you kill a Blade Master in front of witnesses. Has to have witnesses, right? So I can't just be like,
yeah,
I can't be like run up and stab some dude in the back and grab his Heronmark sword.
Totally killed
like,
him. Single combat, bro. I'm so tough.
He was asleep.
But that's another one. It's like, you know, the first time you have to get into a real fight with Blade Master, you're going to get fucking hacked.
Yeah, exactly. So. Again, like you have to wear your black belt everywhere you go. So if you walk around with it, somebody's eventually going to be like, you know what? I think I'm a Blade Master. I'm going to go up and find out if I'm a Blade Master. And most of the time you lose and get killed. But then, you know, every once in a while, you know, you kill it and you get you take the guy's sword and it's got Heronmarks on it. So you get a Heronmark sword.
So you basically have to jump yourself in to the Blade Masters.
Kind of, yeah.
But like, they're not necessarily your foe. So you're killing a potential partner to prove that you're badass enough to fight next to him.
Well, that's not necessarily true, because there is the other way that you can get it, right? And then you can fight someone in battle, like say like there's a war going on and you come up against the Blade Master, right? While the war, like, you know, while combat is going on all around.
Are you going to play the Turok fight as your second clip for the Blade Master?
No, I didn't have that
really?
One.
Really?
No, I didn't.
Oh, okay. I thought that's what you were going to go with.
I have a different one.
Spoiler alert, Rand earns the Herons, because that guy is a true Blade Master.
But if you actually, you know, there's a whole scene in there where he's talking to Nynaeve about it. And he's like, she's like, you're a Blade Master. And he's like, no, I'm not. And she's like, but you killed a Blade Master. He goes, yeah, but there was no witnesses.
Okay.
Right. But I mean, we witness it through the fourth wall as a reader, so we know.
Exactly. We know that he is.
But I mean, I'm saying, yes, in the story, he's not recognized. He does. He kills another, like, there's another time because he is sparring with like five or seven people.
Yeah.
And I think Lan is one of the people, and they're all just kind of like, yeah, like this dude, he gets told often as you get further in, like, you're worthy of the Heron, brother. Like, even when he starts to make his power rot blade, it has Herons on it. I think even he, you know, so I think inherently believes, whether it's him or Lutheran coming out, he believes that he's worthy of the Herons. Or it's just a connection to his dad, but I feel like it's like, you know, deep down he realizes that he is worthy of the Herons, whether it's because of Turok or whatever. Because he trains so hard.
Yeah, that's another thing. So he trains all the time with the sword, because there's been times when he's like been cut off from the power. So he's like, I'm not going to be defenseless. It's just not going to happen.
Does that start because he gets cut off the power, or does he just, he starts learning the blade because, you know, at first he can't channel at will, obviously, but, and once he learns it, kind of call, I guess he doesn't really, that he has trouble calling the power at will until what, Shadow Rising, basically.
Yeah. But he also learns how to fight with spears. He also learns how to fight with his hands from the Aiel.
Yeah. He learns how to be as badass as any Aiel with hands and fists and
maybe
feet.
He doesn't learn how to learn spears, but he does learn how
to. He learns how to juggle.
Yeah. No, he can't juggle.
Oh, he
learns how
juggle.
To play the flute.
He can play the flute.
he mastered the ancient art of origami as well.
Yes.
So how are a lot of warders Blade Masters? Just a couple?
No. It's
none
a,
of
it's
them.
A small, no,
is
it's a
Hamar
small number.
A Blade Master? He's a Blade Master because Wingawen.
We'll cover that in the clip.
Okay, cool.
Oh.
Yeah.
Let's get to the next clip.
I'll shut the fuck up then.
No, it's a good thing that you said that, because it's actually going to be covered in this clip. So let me make sure that I got it'll actually play this time.
The Gathering Storm. What chapter?
So what we're going to listen to is Gawain, which we haven't met yet on the TV show. Gawain is Elaine's brother, one of Elaine's brothers. Elaine is the daughter heir of Andor. Again, we haven't met her yet, but she has been cast in the show. We just talked about her last week.
Ciara Coveney, I think is her name.
Yeah. So she will be she'll be a very integral part. And then Gawain will also be a very integral part. This is way, way later in the books, but this is Gawain is training with the sword and he's fighting against a guy who's a blade master. And then another guy, another warder. They're both warders. And they're fighting him both at the same time. And he just bested both of them. And they're like, holy crap, you know, this is amazing. And then I'll just pick it up from right there. And then we'll talk about it afterwards. And the one of the guys, the blade master, his name is Sleet.
Saying, Trakand, the short man continued, we'll need to find you a blade with some herons on it. No one should have to face you without knowing what they're getting into. I'm not a blade master, Gawain said quietly, taking the ladle back from Crooknosed Sleet and having a drink. It was warm, which felt good. Less of a shock, more natural. You killed Hamar, didn't you? Marlesh asked. Gawain hesitated. The simplicity he'd felt before, while fighting, was already crumbling. Yes. Well, then you're a blade master, Marlesh said. Should have taken his sword when he fell. It wasn't respectful, Gawain said. Besides, I didn't have time to claim prizes. Marlesh laughed, as if at a joke, though Gawain hadn't intended one. He glanced over at Sleet, who was watching him with curious eyes.
So you can see, that's how they're like, you know, hey, you know, you have the skill to be a blade master. And he's like, I'm not a blade master. He's like, wait a second. You killed a guy who was a blade master, right? Yes. Well, why didn't you take his sword? You're a blade master. You killed a guy who's a blade master. Even if like he just beat a blade master, they're like, you know, that's not what makes you the blade master. What makes you the blade master was you killed a guy who was a blade master. You should have taken his sword then.
Okay.
But even then, so, you know, what they're talking about is, you know, like the black belt that we were talking about.
Yeah.
It's not just a like a sign of skill. It's kind of a warning, too. Don't just come up and mess with this guy. Yeah, you know, he's got Heron marked blades.
He's probably killed someone, no matter how good you think you are. He killed someone better to get that sword.
Exactly. And we didn't talk about it on the last clip, but that's how Tam got his blade master blade too. And they don't.
Oh,
yes. So when he says he paid a heavy price for it,
means he murdered.
He had to kill somebody to get it.
Oh,
Johnny Ringo.
Okay. Do we ever get that story? Like, first, we just know that that's how he got it. So does anyone make a new Heron Mark sword, or is there just 100 of them out there and they're all killing each other for him? Or could you make a new sword and get that stamp put on it?
You can make a new one if you want.
Yeah. And you can just take your old sword and put herons on it and be like, oh, yeah, that dude's a blade master.
Well, they start popping up. I think, doesn't Rand get Lan's? Lan ends up with a Heron Mark blade, right?
No, he always has this.
Come on. Doesn't he? I swear he has a Heron Mark blade.
Not unless they put herons on the. Does something happen to his, you know, the Malkyr blade, the King blade?
I swear, I thought that maybe they put herons on. I thought they had herons on that blade.
There's a possibility. Again, that's the last book.
Yeah, how big of a storyline does it end up being? Like, is there anyone who goes out hunting for blade masters to kill? Or is it just something that usually just happens and you're like, oh. No.
Well, that Turok dude kind of is like, oh, finally someone worthy, you know? But, I mean, not like that.
No, it's kind of, so in the very beginning of the first book, you know, throughout the first book, it's a way that people are like, oh, this kid, he's carrying a Heron Mark blade. That's a good way to find him.
Yeah, Rand's, well, you know what? And I just thought about it, dude, in the Carithian cycle, like meaning of it all, like that's his first marking. Cause I was just going to say he is marked as the dragon before he's even marked. Cause people are just like, who's this guy? And he's like supposed to be some, because of the way like they dress, you know, it's like, he's just a farm kid, you know? And like Dez saying, it's like, they just can't wrap their heads around how he could be anything but a fucking field hand.
Well, it's weird because, like, why would this farm kid who's not a soldier, all of a sudden have like be walking around with a Haremark blade?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's just kind of like, doesn't make any sense, man. It just doesn't make any sense. It's like, well, yeah, because it's...
yeah, it might be like a one in a billion thing.
Well, and how... But like, I'm surprised they're not like more scared of him, like thinking that he like ambushed somebody. Like he fucking stood back from a deep distance and...
Well, it gets him out of a couple of situations, doesn't it, Jeremy? Like, they're kind of like, I mean, it gets him into a couple of situations, but doesn't they're like, hey, he's got a fucking hair and like, maybe.
That's there's a scene in the first book where some white cloaks run into him and they're like, watch out.
That's right.
They're like, watch out, kid. And he's like, and so this is like an in-depth story. But so after Rand channels like the first time, which he doesn't even realize is
it when they're in Berlin, when the for the yes. White Cloaks in Berlin,
yes. So after Rand channels the first time, he starts to like act impulsively, and they say that's one of the signs.
It's like part of the channeling sickness.
Yeah. So you'll get sick sometimes too, and he ends up getting sick too. But you get these like real impulsive, like weird, like rushes almost. So he's like on Bale Doman's ship and he climbs to the top of the mast and he's like jumping around and like swinging off of the ropes and stuff.
Like, I have to do this, dude. Yeah. Like, seriously, it's almost like a tick.
Yeah. And then so then later in Berlin, or I guess maybe before that in Berlin, these white cloaks come up to him and they're like, hey, kid, get out of the way. We're the white cloaks. And he's like, whatever. And he like flings his like arm back to show his sword.
That's right.
And they're like, whoa, he's got a Haremark blade. And the guy's like, hey, he's too young to have a Haremark blade. He goes, and he's like, what? So he says something like, oh, yeah, am I? And then.
Yeah, it's like, fuck around and find out, guy. You want to play?
It's like the stormtroopers. Move along. Nothing to see here. Move along.
I can't find a picture. I was looking online. I wanted to see a picture of what the Haremark looks like in the show.
Oh, I can send you one right now.
If you look on the Haremark on the show too, they are not on the hilt, which is the handle, I guess, of the sword.
It's on the pommel, like really close on the blade on the pommel, or real close to the pommel, I should say.
Which in the book, it's supposed to be.
Or the cross guard, I should say.
It's supposed to be on the blade and then on the handle as well. That's really important.
Scabbard too?
Yes, I think there might be one on the scabbard, but it's really important.
The other two are the most important, though.
Yes, it's really important, and I don't know how you get to the branding without that on the handle.
Yeah. Well, and then like a couple of them pop up. He ends up with Layman's sword from Carheen, which is a Haremark blade. And Ranzan ends up taking all of the like jewels out of the hilt and then buying her something really nice, or maybe just gives her the jewels. I can't remember. But then he gets a normal hilt on it so he can actually use it. But then he ends up giving it to Tam, I believe.
No, Tam gets Arthur Hawkwing's sword.
Oh, how does he get Arthur Hawkwing's sword? I forgot.
They find it. They find it randomly. It's weird. I have to reread the book. I don't know about you. I only read the last book one time, and the other two books probably twice.
Oh, dude, the last three that Sanderson, dude, I think you should reread them. I think you'll really like them if you reread them.
I'm going to,
because they're really good. They're really fast paced. They remind me of the first five books.
Okay,
and I think if you try to just forget that Brandon Sanderson wrote them and think about the parts where Robert Jordan wrote really ferociously fast, like there are parts in The Shadow Rising where he goes maniacally fast and then he goes to a fucking standstill.
Yeah.
And then The Fires of the Heavens, same thing. But the first three are, you know, I kind of thought Eye of the World really just started off running, but it's like, man, I didn't realize it kind of, it's like now we're jogging, now we're running. Okay, here we go. You know, it's like, and then like fucking Great Hunt seems really fast to me. And then I can't wait for Desmond to get to Dragon Reborn. And like when he gets to the parts of the books where like when Brand kills that fucking merchant train of people, like that is one of the gnarliest couple of pages. It's like, just it's Rand at his best and worst, you know, because it's like he's so scared and he's like freaking out, and I think his instincts are right, because I think they were bad, they were dark friends, right?
Well, that's the thing, I had to reread that several times because
and the one is you pointed out is a gray man,
because he didn't even realize he was there.
Yeah, he's like, we don't even realize it at the time, because he's like, oh, you chose the wrong company, friend, I didn't even notice you were there. And it's like, yeah, because he was a fucking gray man.
Yeah, so you know that they're all dark friends then. But it's so subtly written at the point at that point, I had to reread it over and over again. Of course, I was like probably 15 too, so I was like, not understanding subtlety.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah, layers upon layers.
I'm not gonna lie, I'm a little less excited about the Heron Mark now than I was when we started.
What?
I thought there was more of a
Jeremy,
like.
Jeremy, you're fired as episode writer.
I disappointed him.
I'm really fucking glad we talked about it. I know it matters, but I just thought that, like, you know, Tam, like, went to some fucking Jedi temple and trained.
Like fucking Christian Bale and Batman went to some fucking temple in the lands. He's like, I gotta get there. I gotta learn to be a better man.
I didn't realize it was just, I killed a Blade Master. Like, he's obviously badass. Like, you don't get it, but I just... It's like I said, I thought it was more of a definable.
No, it's not oops, I killed the Blade Master.
Yeah, it's not oops, I killed the Blade Master. And I feel like I feel like something to do with like the way Tam is so humble about it.
Yeah.
Ran.
Yeah.
Gowan. It's not something, it's like, you know, you don't got to fucking swing your dick. You know what I mean? If you're a Blade Master, it's like the Heron lets people know. And like the one guy's like, you should have one because it's not really fair for someone to come up and pick a fight with you because it's not a fucking fair fight. Because you're going to carve them up.
Yeah.
So like Jeremy was saying, it's like, it's kind of like a warning sign. Like, hey, man, don't fucking play with this dude.
Beating a Blade Master, there's no, I accidentally did it. You know, I don't know if you've ever wrestled someone who's an actual wrestler. You don't accidentally beat them.
Yeah.
They have
muscles.
I didn't
wrestle with you anymore once you started wrestling because it wasn't fair.
They have muscles where you shouldn't have muscles. They got muscles in their neck and the muscles in their ears. And yeah, it's different. Like, it's a different person.
They know how to grapple you and just take away all your strength. Yeah. Yeah. Well, no, I just, maybe this does come in the book. Like, I feel like there should be, are there any fake people, like people who like, oops, I killed a Blade Master and then just get fucking annihilated?
No, the closest is kind of Rand, because Rand in the second book, he's fighting some guy who is a Blade Master, and he knows at the time that like, I can't beat a Blade Master. I just can't do it. I'm not good enough. But yeah, Turok, but he keeps pressing, but he uses his brain and like he actually presses him and then stops pressing him and then does stuff to where he confuses the guy and ends up he does kill him.
Tam is kind of doing Rand a disservice. I mean, Rand
kind of outsmarts the guy more than like outswordsmans him.
Yes.
Like, because Rand's very clever and smart. And also he's got some kind of inherent kind of like channeling of Luz Theron's, you know, kind of talents.
He's also big and strong and young. I mean, he's like 6'5", and, you know, he's supposed to be like 6'5", and a big, strong
kid.
He's
fast, and he's a natural, and he has been training. It's like, he's not useless.
But not when Tam gives him the sword. I mean, when Tam gives him the sword, he's putting a target on his back.
Absolutely.
He doesn't really give it to him, though. He kind of just takes it.
He tells him to take it. Yeah, he tells him to take it.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, it's he knows it's, you know, it. Well, he would assume that it's going to cause trouble. Because everywhere you go, it's a target on your back. Like, you're going to stand out in a crowd. That's the problem.
Because early on, the first fucking... I mean, I don't know. I mean, Rand has powers that he doesn't even know he has yet. But, like, the first tavern he walks into, someone could just be like, ha-ha, slice. Mine now.
Well, when he gets to Camelin, he does end up covering it up because it's kind of the opposite. It's like, it's drawing way too many eyes and people are kind of like, he's getting the vibe that people might try to test him. Or at least that's what I felt.
Okay.
Yeah, there are. I'm assuming that there's going to be guys like in a smaller town. You might walk into like a bar or something like that, and they're going to be like, "Oh, that guy's got a Heron Mark sword. I'm not doing anything." But if you go into a big, if you walk into a big one, some guy's going to be like, "Bro, I'll do UFC. I'll fight you. I don't care."
He has the death mark in 5 systems.
I don't like you either. Fantastic. Thank you for listening to our podcast about Wheel of Time. Thank the light, everybody. Check us out on Twitter. We are Wolf Brothers at Parseilman. That is at Parseilman on the Bird app. Send your questions and comments. And if there's something you want us to cover, we can talk about, you can send us a picture of your birthmark. We can do an episode about that. Send that to thankthelight@gmail.com. That is thankthelight@gmail.com. And I know I talked some shit about the Heron Mark there at the end. I'm getting I'm getting one of these tattoos. If we do one live show, I'm getting a Haremark tattoo. Like, that makes this the most legit thing I've ever done in my life. I don't care if there's five people in an old bar. If we have microphones and a stage, I'm going out and getting a Haremark tattoo.
I will be there to watch you.
I'll get something. Maybe not the Matt Belly. I think we'd have to pull it off in one show, so it'll probably have to be smaller.
I'll pay for it.
But I don't know. Something. I'll get some dice or a band of the Red Hand or a dragon or something.
Do you have any tattoos, Jeremy?
No.
Oh, yeah. We'll get you one. We'll get you one.
No tattoos.
We'll get you one. Yep.
This guy gets no
right
tattoos.
Right on your ass cheek. Wait.
He's like, how about this? If we do a tour, you get a tattoo.
Little black teardrop.
Right by my under to my eye.
Right there. No, on your taint.
After the first and million.
Small little leather just says.
All right, I'll think about that.
Side. Yeah, you know what? Actually, you don't have to put the teardrop, just siding on your taint.
Just a little wisp of taint coming out of his butthole.
No, he's got to get his perineum tattooed. It just says siding.
Just a little oily taint.
Huh? Isn't that the part underneath your lip?
Come on, dude. No wonder you only got two kids.
Jeremy, we are going to teach you some. Jeremy's getting quite an education on this podcast.
He's full of shit. I've seen your fucking browser history.
Oh, we're definitely going to teach him about incognito then. That's next on Time Pop. How to use incognito mode. If you would like something else to listen to while you're waiting for our next episode, go straight to All the Answers. If you want more dick and fart jokes, but with just a little bit more spirituality mixed in, go check out All the Answers with Katie and Cassidy. We have time travel movies on Time Pop. If you want to check out, get your fitness and nutrition in line, go to Truth Not Trends with Liam and Jesse. That is Truth Not Trends. They just did a really cool interview with some cool cats who have a fitness center in New York. So we are bi-coastal, baby. Dang. With the Truth Not Trends. And Be Brave, awesome women telling awesome stories and making us all feel like we're weaklings for bitching about the stuff that we bitch out. That is Be Brave with Kara and Patty. You can find all of that at whatsoundsawesome.com. That is whatsoundsawesome.com, brought to you by We Mixed It, LLC. Put your dagger in your horn box.
Hey, that's awesome.
May you always find water and shade.
# Billy Zane as Asmodean. Always.
Mixed and edited by Desmond McNeese for We Mixed It, LLC. Go to whatsoundsawesome.com.
And the show comes to a grinding halt.